want to break into the system.
Someone without access to the exam freedom.
I have been doing a little hacking in here, as a matter of fact.
Computers and the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence. If I got in for it, I could reconstruct it.
Everyone, welcome to the December 14th edition of the In the Now Show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with his trusty sidekick,
VR.
All right. Well, we've got a lot of interesting news, as usual, to bring to you, bringing all the information that's happening out there in the technological world, a little bit of politics involved, of course. I mean, geez, getting integrated with our lives every day, even more and more and more. Well...
Yeah, kind of. Well, it's kind of the whole infrastructure of, you know, information communication, which really, you know, it's using a public utility to transfer that kind of information along. So it's got to involve some politics. You know, it's the very, you know, nature of what we do anymore. So the government's got to be involved. Like the government, you know, takes care of the streets, the, you know, all the stuff that we all use on a daily basis. So it's got to be there.
Definitely. Well, tonight is a weird night. I just want to give my appreciation to VR. We're actually doing the show really late. Not as if we always do it really late. VR, thanks for always showing up to the show, and thanks for putting your thoughts forward and your intellect and your comments. And you've definitely made this show what it is.
Thank you. I take this award of... The Medal of Honor, the Medal of Valor.
It's the In the Now Source Awards.
Yeah, that's but I've gone way beyond, above and beyond the call of duty to be here whenever I can.
Yeah.
Even if I have to sew myself on my own arm to get here.
Ooh. And another strange thing occurring tonight. VR's nickname. It comes from a place that me and him met that we've been going there for quite some time. It's Video Roundup, actually. And you may even twist it into VR, thinking in the third dimension and all these other things. But that's really where it came from.
But the other symbolism is good, too.
Yeah. Tonight is the last day that VR is open.
And now I'm closed. I am no longer a fully functioning human being.
Yeah. Oh, Video Roundup, actually. It's a pool hall, video games. You know, great people, great times. Really a good place for people around here to hang out at. And actually, I had... it's Christmas time, so, you know, it's a lot of... you know, financially you got to buy presents, and you don't have to, but, you know, you want to buy presents for people if that's, you know, what you follow. Anyways, I had to do it. I spent $75 to buy a rack of balls from VR. So I bought that to keep that as a token.
And ladies, not my rack of balls.
Yeah, not VR's, because they're not as shiny and they're not as large as the.
They're larger.
Oh, okay.
I've been told I have elephantitis down there. All right.
That sounds like that could actually be more of a problem than a benefit.
Yeah, I've grown to accustomed to the complications thereof.
Okay. Moving right along. We've talked a little bit about this in the past. A lot of these things we've talked about in the past, but as things progress, more news comes about. Well, it's just a story that's talking about how biometrics is being used more often. And... here's kind of a one-liner here. High-tech security systems that rely on detailed are biometrics. Our high-tech security systems that rely on detailed measurements of the human body, known as biometrics, are taking off. But they should be. But should they be? Should they be taking off? And those are the questions you have to ask yourself. And here are some of the things that are being implemented using biometrics. America will begin using biometrics at its airports and seaports on January 5th, 2004. Under the new U.S. visit program, all foreigners entering on visas will have their hands and faces digitally scanned. This will create what Tom Ridge, America's Homeland Security Supremo, calls an electronic check-in and check-out system for the foreign nationals. American citizens will also be affected as new passports with a chip that contains biometric data are used from the for the next year, and the new rules specify that by October 26, 2004, all countries whose nationals can enter America without a visa, including Western Europe countries, Japan, and Australia, must begin issuing passports that contain biometric data too.
And that's really kind of a shady thing, because like, how many people use their passport on really any regular basis? Like, it's kind of like your driver's license. Do you get it updated every time you color, you know, you cut your hair, or you know, do something weird, or shave your beard, or grow one?
Well, no. I think these are typical. I mean, I would think that they would stick with something that would stay permanently, like a fingerprint or something like that.
There's nothing in our body, nothing that stays. Oh, okay, maybe the inner ear bone, but everything changes over time.
So you're saying, but fingerprinting is an effective method. I mean,
Fingerprint, yeah, great. But like measuring, you know, of having your face, you know, the distance between the, you know, the nodes of your cheekbones, and in proportion to your, you know, your brow ridge, you know, that stuff's going to change over time.
Might be better just to stay at home, folks.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a foul, you know, eventually it's going to be a flawed system. Or it's going to have to be so intricate and so invasive.
I think you're thinking too deep. I think if you match your finger, you know, print up to a database, they're going to be able to finger, you know, pinpoint you.
Yeah, and it takes weeks.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, most of the time. Okay.
No, I mean, it takes a matter of seconds.
Well, imagine, you know, how, you know, all right, well, the fastest computer does how many calculations per second?
Well, the fastest one, I don't know, it's around, 43 teraflops or whatever it is?
That's okay. Well, that's pretty big, so.
Yeah.
It might take that computer to match up your fingerprints with all the fingerprints in its database for like 6 billion people.
No way. No, because, there's techniques, and the thing
well, that... Well, yeah, they... Yeah, I understand that.
And they don't match the whole fingerprint. They actually just... They plot points. And they don't plot for every single point. It's only a few points that they plot, and that's unique enough. Yeah, I mean, they use it all the time. I mean,
okay.
It's you know.
So everybody's gonna get scanned. Yeah. That's just a little too big brother for me personally.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well. I mean.
So I'm gonna try to fight it in whichever obscure way I can.
Yeah. You're gonna burn your fingers.
Well, not go that far.
Okay.
Not yet, anyway.
But, and actually, I heard another story about a high school here in Arizona, actually, that use a camera, basically kind of like a webcam, around the facility, around the school, to pinpoint perps, pinpoint, people that have done child molestation, and compare them back to a database. So, it's more the norm, you know, and it's.
Yeah, and pretty soon they're going to be on street corners and. They've done that sort of thing in England quite a while ago, where they were actually doing, you know, street corner cams and, you know, matching up faces with.
Yeah, I heard Europe is one of the largest people that have largest country that has surveillance cameras.
Yeah, there's some pros and there's some cons to it, but really, yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. Is really if. The safest place to be is a place where you have the most control over protecting yourself. Because if everybody that's around, everybody in the, you know, the society or the whatever, is able to protect themselves, is there going to be much crime? Is there going to be much violation of anything? No, because there's no one going to be able to dominate anybody else effectively. Because everybody's going to be able to keep control over themselves.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, that's the thing, is that there are people that don't seem, they can't seem to keep control of themselves, so, you know, we're coming up with these things, and we're trying...
But if we allow everybody to be able to protect themselves, those people who do are not able to control themselves will be dealt with rather quickly and effectively, and we don't have to rely on anybody else to do so.
It's the world's really complicated place.
Oh, I know.
So, you know, but it's
but
kind
I join
of
my really simple heuristics here.
Well, you know, the simplest way is usually the best way.
They're just not the most PC at this present time.
No. No. Let's see. Well, yeah, you know, it's tough. You know, what do you do? I guess, you know, I present that story. I mean, you really want to start thinking, what can you do to counter that? And it's almost like it's hard enough to cover it in the show because it's so ever-changing. You just have to, you know, use your wits about you to figure out what's the best method of doing things and feeling comfortable in your life and having control of your information and who you are. So it seems like...
makes me want to go out and get, like, zip in and zip out cheek implants.
Yeah, they got those at Circle K now.
Really?
Yeah.
Great. I'm going to go down and have some plastic surgery done down at the Circle K.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we spent a lot of time on that story. We got a lot of stuff to cover, so let's move on. Okay. Well, there's a new product out that is called the Cell Phone Jammer. Well, I'm sure people that are techies and, you know, could have created this on their own. But this is something that you can actually pick up and buy. And let's see if I have the website here that it's at. You can probably Google Cell Phone Jammer. But basically, it operates on the 800, 900, and 1900 megahertz networks. Works in USA and Canada. It's portable. It's got two external antennas, and it's only $170. Let's see.
And it's not a hopper or a chopper.
No.
All right. Then okay. Tell me what it does.
What do you mean? It jams cell phone networks. Cell phone jammer.
Well, wow.
As I said, folks, it's really late. So
that's, yeah. Wow. Well, I don't see any, like, practical real use for this thing. Except for just...
General anarchy?
Yeah.
General destruction? General,
Yeah, just chaos and miscommunication. And, like, you know what? I'm not going to allow these people to talk to each other. And I'm going to push a button and mass chaos occurs.
Well, see, that's the reason I'm bringing up this story, is that things like that are coming out. And we had a story on one of our other shows where we talked about the device that you could purchase that allows you to change the red lights green or green lights red.
Oh, yeah. That's... So, I think that's a little bit more deadly than, you know, jamming cell phones, except for if there's an accident and somebody's calling for help.
How about this? How about this? Let's just say you're hanging out with some chick you'd like to talk to.
Uh-huh.
All right? And she needs to call her boyfriend and tell her where she is.
Okay, see, now I'm seeing the practical application.
Yeah, when it comes back to sex, everything seems to be kosher.
Yeah.
okay.
Doing the good cock block there, it's all okay.
Yeah. So the model number on that, I'm sure if you Google it, man, I don't have the website here. The model number is SH066PL2A/B. So I'm sure you can actually Google that up and find it. So if you'd like to play with that, go ahead. But I don't know. The reason I brought that up is because it seems like since there's so many devices for control, it seems like... devices for circumvention coming out a lot.
Yeah, that sounds... Well, it's a good balance of power there.
Yeah, it needs to be there. And both can be abused. So,
oh, yeah.
All right.
When one's being abused, the other can be used.
Used and abused.
Yes.
That's terrible.
That's beautiful.
Guess... We're seeing our differences.
Yeah, that's... And see, that's the whole, like, you know... Yeah.
It depends on my mood. That might have been beautiful. Maybe.
Yeah.
It depends. Okay. And then also, moving right along. Okay, well, Lindo's back in the day, not too long ago made a deal with Walmart to make Walmart PCs. And Walmart's doing the PC thing and selling cheap Windows machines. But now Sun is now trying to work with Walmart and Office Depot to include their Java desktop on consumer PCs and laptops in conjunction with Walmart.
Ooh.
So it will be built on top of Linux, and they'll be using their, from what I saw, they call it their, yeah, it's their Java desktop, but it's their GUI called Mad Hatter. It looks kind of like GNOME, but it's tweaked, and Sun's put their own little things in there, and they'll be selling PCs along that front as well.
Well, that sounds like a good method for Linux to get in a major market share there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody shops at Walmart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the whole big business thing that we kind of are against, too.
I think everyone on this show can see how I'm always fighting with how to stay in the middle. I mean, it's really tough, you know, because it's great to have a company to provide you with stuff, right?
Yeah, it's good.
Decent prices,
cause,
right?
Because I'm, you know, I can't make everything that I want to be able to survive.
No. Well, maybe.
Just to survive, yeah, but everything that I want, no.
Yeah, and we'd be pretty alone, you know, because there's so many of these consumer products. But on the other side, you know, there's always the corporate monstrosity. All those stories about Walmart sweatshops and stuff like that. And
yeah, but I've been thinking about the whole Marxism and the actual, like, corporations are necessary for socialism to come about. And the reason being that the corporations actually have the capital in order to create the infrastructure of communication surplus, you know, for distribution and communication. And so the more they merge and grow and expand, that essentially once it becomes a total world, one corporation that essentially controls everything throughout the world or close to it, or in just a few, handful, then the people, the proletariat, the workforce, can rise up, throw all the bureaucrats out, and we will be able to essentially produce everything that we want and need, and you know, own everything too.
Yeah, you know, all these things that we do, systems and companies and politics, it's really just to make our lives better and to live.
That's easier.
Yeah.
Easier.
But the problem is a lot of people have, you know, hatred or these other feelings of anger and negativity, and they've used that as their survival tool, and the offspring is the suffering of enduring that from someone or something or an entity.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we went from Walmart PCs to saving the world.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the problem with the whole, like, you know, like, world social, you know, socialist system is I really don't see that there'd be much innovation afterwards.
And people would be pretty accepted to get all sorts of stuff cheap.
Well, it would kind of do away with the whole money system because you'd be kind of like, you know, like, have to work. You'd be like, because if you didn't, everybody would shun you and be like, you don't work. Yeah, I'm not going to give you my product. And so you don't get any, like, barter credit or just being, hi, I'm a productive member of society. Please, can I get my electricity turned back on?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, you know. I guess we just touched another subject in our, you know, abstractual thinking this evening that, not totally abstract, but abstract from the stories, that people, you know, with all these changes in the world are constantly trying to figure out who the hell they are in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I? You know, what is my stance on things? What do I think about it? And a lot of people are just like, you know, it's sometimes it's mental overload. You're like, I got to not care so much about that. I got to shut down that, or I'm going to close that out and stick to this. And
well, that's why I pay somebody to do that for me.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that, obviously, there's always been changes through the years. It's new to me because, I mean, you know, this is when I've lived.
Well, it's just the rate of change has been, accelerated.
Yeah, rapidly.
Well, it's an exponential curve right now.
So, all right. Well, just to bring up a quick story. If you have Windows 98.
98.
or SQL Server 7, Microsoft no longer will support it. It's, you know.
Oh, that's nice.
It's now been retired. As for customers, is December 15th, so that's actually tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Wow, so I better, like, delete my, you know, Windows 98 and upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah, and they said you want to upgrade because,
no one's going to protect me from viruses.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's
or what if it, like, gets corrupted and I, like, have to do something with it?
Yeah. So they said that I think it's 10 to 20% of Windows users still have that Windows 98 in the world. Yep. So that has been retired. Give it the boot.
So they've reopened up another 10 to 20% of their market share for new development.
Yep. I mean, you can't. I don't think I'm going to try to pull the big market thing here. Obviously, they get that out of it. But you can't support product forever. I mean,
yeah, it's impractical.
Unless it's like a Chevy big block or something.
That's so versatile. That's like, you know, the pure kernel right there that you can just bolt on accessories.
Yeah, they still make the same block, you know.
That's really cheap for the manufacturers because they just don't have to redesign.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I know this information is just kind of just general news, but we'll be getting to more interesting stuff, definitely. Okay. Well, another interesting thing that happened during December, Microsoft now, it's the second Tuesday of every month. What they do is it's for IT managers to be able to plan better for, you know, updating all these patches on their systems. Microsoft is given a day every month that they will use to say that they're going to release the patches that you can plan and get ready to do it that day. Well, for some reason, this month they said that they weren't going to do any patches, yet their system still had a patch out there. It was kind of weird. So it seems like it was automated to a degree where they didn't realize it, and they said they weren't going to have any patches, and the system still released like an old patch out there.
So in all actuality, what it probably did is they actually wrote all these patches while they were programming the original program and just automated the system to throw those out so people have to keep coming back to their site.
Yeah, there's something in there and they haven't figured out. Well, maybe they did by now, but it still kicks. It still kicked the patch out, and they were wondering why it happened. For those of you that don't know, if you're using Microsoft systems or you're in an IT environment and you're planning for that, it's the second Tuesday of every month that they'll be releasing all their patches, so you can set aside your Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to, you know, get all those machines updated.
Don't schedule any meetings.
Depending on how many you have. All right. Okay, on to the interesting stuff. Okay, now, this is something I read about, and I've been trying to find more information about it, but I haven't been able to. I'll just read it straight off here. If you or your family member received a Dell PC as a gift this Christmas, you may be in for a surprise if it becomes infected with spyware. Dell has instituted what has to be the most misguided tech support policy I have ever seen. Not only will Dell refuse to tell you how to remove the spyware, they won't even refer you to the websites that can help. Why does Dell do this? Dell cites the possibility that removing spyware might violate user agreements between the user and some other company. So basically, Dell computers are shipping with spyware.
Ooh.
And... so they're not going to tell you how to remove it and tell you what's going on. So that really sucks. There's more and more of that going on, obviously, just through viruses and installing, programs that, add their own little extra functionality you didn't know about, in there. And it's becoming an increasingly more popular thing to where there you can basically get programs out there that specifically search for spyware. So, there was the antivirus, craze where they're trying to cover viruses, and personal firewall seems to be another thing. So you not only have to buy your PC, get antivirus, a firewall, patch it every second Tuesday of every month, and put your spyware remover program on there.
And where might we find one of these spyware counterintelligence programs?
Well, I think the guys that wrote the spyware software wrote the spyware removal software. There's a lot of companies out there that do it. Some of them integrate it with their antivirus software. Of course, there's the pop-up blocker.
Ooh.
Yep, pop-up blocker. I've even seen, Zone Alarms has something that actually helps you make sure your eBay connection is secure. Make sure your information's not leaking when you're using eBay.
I had no idea that eBay wasn't secure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny. You buy this PC, and maybe it comes shipped with this kind of stuff, or maybe it's a 30-day trial. But you get, scared into, it's a necessity, right? Right? I mean, we need to we don't want that stuff on our computer. But it's just one of those things that when something bad happens, somebody else takes advantage of it. Kind of like a lawyer.
Yeah, very much so.
Your situation sucks, so come to me, pay me a bunch of dough, and I'll help you out.
When really the best, any of this bad stuff is you just don't turn it on.
Or install Linux. Now, I'm just saying that because a lot of that spyware stuff hasn't translated over to Linux, especially with just the... It definitely wouldn't be something that you would see a part of a distro. And it's not... Now, I don't know what spyware is in Windows, but it's not something, it's open source and you can rely on it. Mozilla's pretty good doing its own, It's, most things are actually coded for Windows. Now, who knows how long it'll take to really start getting things into Linux. It can happen, folks. It's not not like it's not going to happen. Or I don't know. Choose your poison. Choose Linux and there's not so much poison, but maybe you don't get all the programs you want with it. Or go with Windows, but you have to keep up to date on these things. So it's a very unpleasant experience. It's to go along the lines of what I was saying once to somebody that everything in life that's pleasurable, for some reason, someone has moved in and found a way to charge for it. So just like what I did was mention somebody is when they were speeding once, they're like, oh, I got to pay this ticket. It sucks. And I said, really, what you're doing is you're paying for your right to speed. You can speed all you want, and when you get caught, you're going to pay, for that enjoyment, because sometimes that enjoyment actually has an inverse effect on others.
Yeah.
So while you're using your computer, you pay to use it, and you pay to use on the web, and you're doing these things, but sometimes people write these things. And
so it would really make sense for the city to actually have a speeding pass that you just, every year you pay like $5 to $1,000, and you can speed. And the cop pulls you over, and you go, I got my pass.
Yeah.
And he goes, thank you. You have a great day.
Well, it's
a prepaid speeding pass.
Yeah.
It's great.
If everyone did that, I don't know. Maybe that's a great idea if everything was like that.
I'm really kind of digging the idea.
Who knows?
Everybody write your congressman, write your, go down to City Hall.
It wouldn't be speeding, though. You'd have to do like everything at once. You'd have to come up with a huge list of pricing for everything at once.
Uh-huh.
So that way everyone will basically...
So really, the government should just take over insurance companies, too.
Yeah.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
No. Okay. Man, we have a lot of stuff here. We're just kind of spacing because it's really late.
Yeah, I think we're just going to have to cut off when we get done.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Okay, well, another thing that's going on out there in the world of... the world
it's going around and it's on sometime.
Yeah, is that people are actually using ATM machines to steal your personal information.
Really now?
And your cash. So here's a scoop.
Is there a little robot arm that comes from underneath it and steals the cash right from under you?
It pickpockets you right there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I've been working on a plot for that one for years, but I don't have the gumption or the initiative to do
okay.
it. Oh, and I have morals, too. Oh, my.
Yeah. Okay, this ATM gang purchased not 20, but more than 50 ATM machines and put them in a variety of stores in New York, California, and Florida. The crooks got the machines hooked up to the nation's electronic banking network so customers could make normal withdrawals, never knowing that inside the machines there were devices that were stealing their account information. Let's see, how many accounts
were... Oh, so they were dummy ATMs.
No, they worked.
There was a subversive force going involved.
Yeah. This group compromised 21,000 accounts at 1,400 banks. Once the gang had stolen the account information, they'd made duplicates of the customer's bank cards. Then they'd go to a legitimate ATM and make withdrawals.
Wow. That took some imagination.
Yeah.
And actually, like, you know, some capital and...
Get yourself a card writer off eBay and there you go.
Yeah. That's... Yeah. I'm kind of in shock and awe about that one.
The shock and awe effect.
That's right.
Okay, also...
There's actually more like, yeah, wait, they're shock and awe, but it's this little boom. What the heck?
That's amazing. Oh, man. All right. Hey, we go through great lengths to get this show out to you guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, actually, you know what? That's not a very big story. We're going to skip that one so we can cover everything in here. Okay. Well, this is more of a conversation on how open source practices may help improve software engineering.
Hey, that is... Well, duh.
Yeah. And we're going to give you the reasons why.
All right.
At least some really good ones.
Well, yeah, this person's reasons for
it. Yeah, which are, you know, other people's reasons as well. But
yeah.
Okay, well, Walt Sakachi of the University of California, Irvine, and his colleagues are conducting formal studies of the informal world of open source software development, in which a distributed community of developers produces software source code that is freely available to share, study, modify, and redistribute. They're finding that in many ways, open source development can be faster, better, and cheaper than the textbook software engineering offered are often used in corporate settings. In a series of reports posted online, which is at www.isr.uci.edu, Sakashi is documenting how open source development breaks many of the software engineering rules formulated during 30 years of academic research. Far from finding that open source development is just software engineering poorly done, Sakachi and colleagues show that it represents a new approach based on community building and other socio-technical mechanisms that might benefit traditional software engineering. Free and open source software development is faster, better, and cheaper in building a community and in reinforcing the institutionalization a culture for how to develop software, said Sakashi, a senior research scientist at UC Irvine's Institute for Software Research, who has taught software engineering for 2 decades. We're not ready to assert that open source development is the be-all and end-all for software engineering practice, but there's something going on in the open source development that is different from what you see in the textbooks. Sakashi and his colleagues are studying open source projects to understand when the processes and practices work and when they don't. These findings may help businesses understand the implications of adopting open source methods internally or investing in external open source communities. These studies are supported by several information technology research awards from the National Science Foundation, the independent federal agency that supports fundamental research and education across all fields of science and engineering. And here's some of the things he had to say about what they had found. The researchers have so far identified a number of ways in which open source development surpasses traditional software engineering. In successful projects, open source development is faster in the pace of evolution and the rate of software growth. Expertise has also spreads fast through the community. So people are learning, they're growing, and things are evolving at a rapid rate, and evolution in software obviously leads to good software, better software. The researchers also report that open source development is better because of, among other features, its informality, which enables continuous system design and more agile development processes. And open source is cheaper because development tools are open source themselves, and because other costs are often subsidized by corporate donations, volunteer efforts, and gifts for the collective good. Open source is not a poor version of software engineering, but a private collection approach, a collective approach to large software systems, Sakachi said. This is perhaps a new fertile ground between software engineering and the world of open source, and may be what the open source community can contribute to new academic and commercial development efforts. And I had another article which coincides with this. It basically says how to misunderstand open source and open source software development. I'm just going to continue on to some of the benefits that he had listed in here for open source. He actually makes quite a few good things there. Okay. It says right here, I remember thinking how absurd the analogy sounded. Since then... Oh, well, this is something about Since then, Sam came out. Okay, here it goes. This is something talking about open source and its benefit. What would you prefer for Christmas? A Subway token or cash? For those of you who have, assuming, let's say you're in New York, for those of you who have missed Subway travel lately, tokens have all but disappeared. With open source software, you have the equivalent of cash, which you can spend freely on anything you want. With the Subway token, you have limited options, just like the closed and rigid model of proprietary software development. And one of the other things he mentions in here is that what you can do with open source is that you can reuse code that's already out there. It's reusable code because it's open. You can just go find it and grab it. The reliance on an open source tool set. Before I write anything, I check to see if it's been done before. Reuse existing code or at least contact the developer of the closest match and get some ideas. So
you don't have to completely reinvent the wheel every time you go to do something.
Yeah, it
saves a tremendous amount of time and energy.
Yeah, and the movement to growing and evolving is almost perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our plug for open source. We do that a lot here. But hey, when something's good, it's good. All right. Well, we have reported on this before. John Johansson, he was the person that wrote DECSS. Well, basically, it's DECSS is the decryption scheme for decrypting DVDs. And he basically wrote that so people could watch DVDs on their Linux machine because otherwise you couldn't watch it. Well, he was prosecuted for that and acquitted of the charges. But now they're appealing it.
Wait, so he wasn't found innocent of it.
He was found innocent. So the court had rejected Hollywood's claim that it has the right to control the way in which an individual views a DVD after purchase. The court finds that somebody who buys a DVD film that has been legally produced and has legal access to the film.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, if
that
you bought
sense.
It, you should be able to watch it.
That's a first there too.
Yeah. Yeah, John Johansson, his prosecution is the first time that this law has been... Oh, this law, which was the... was that the DMCA? Man, if I don't remember that, that's going to be a bad thing. I think it was the DMCA. I'm pretty sure it was. It's the first time that this law has been used to... to prosecute a person for accessing his own property.
Yeah, that's pretty screwy.
So basically, they're trying to... you know, appeal this because maybe that might affect future cases and they're worried about that. If Johansson's acquittal is turned over on appeal, it becomes illegal for Norwegians, because that's where he's from, to bypass DVD region code restrictions and technical restrictions that prevent fast-forwarding over advertisements or otherwise circumventing digital controls of their own property. An IP Justice Executive Director...
They can't fast-forward over commercials?
No.
Oh, my God.
No, the DVD... I remember reading something to where they make it so you can't fast forward over the commercial. Now, don't quote me, but I remember reading something about that or the fear that they were trying to do that, something like that.
Yeah, that would...
It blows. I mean,
yeah.
When I go to the movie and I see a whole bunch of crappy advertising thing, well, it's cool, you know? I think that should have paid for my damn movie. Right
yeah,
there,
I really think
I mean?
So. I really think that, like, you know, I might be willing to pay, like, $1 for a movie and see advertisements, but if I pay, you know, the...
That's why when you pay for HBO, there's no commercials.
Yeah, it's $8-$9 to go see a movie and then sit through almost, you know, an eighth of that movie is commercials, and then there are commercials in the movie that are, you know, woven in there that...
They done got paid.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the advertisements paid for the complete production of the movie, all, you know, everything, but yet I'm still paying for it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
That's just pure, unadulterated, unhomogenized greed.
You might be dying tomorrow. Check us out tomorrow at noon. Oh, man. Okay, well, we've gotten past those stories, and we're moving over to our SCO section, because things are heating up again.
Oh, God.
They're heating up. Okay, well, SCO, earlier December here. Seems to have been attacked. Denial of service. Can't access the website. So, basically, they were getting some major traffic, And then there was a Grokol, article that came up that basically said that they had faked it. Now, not sure. Not sure if that's true, because another article came out later saying, no, it was true that it happened. But basically, yeah, they were getting hit with lots and lots and lots of traffic. And there's another article. This article is describing that they think that the attack was... It didn't make sense, according to security experts and people that, I guess, are in the town where Sko lives and know the experts or the security folk there.
So
talking
could,
with them.
Could have been self-inflicted?
Could have been. It could have been. It may not have been. But that's the rumor, is that it wasn't. And they were trying to explain some of the details here to why they think it wasn't. They're saying that since it was under a SIN attack, that they should be able to block the SIN attacks. You know, it doesn't make sense, because if you're under so much, you know, bandwidth, it doesn't matter. If you keep blocking, the pipe is filled, you know, and there's no way to send data out that's legitimate, or, you know, accept data that's coming in that's legitimate, or it is going to be extremely slow. So it seemed like they were attacked. I don't know. People that do things such as what they do might bring some bad attention upon themselves. Well, we've talked about this before along with the case. It's getting closer to where, you know, everyone's like, show your cards. You know, people are running out of games to play, trying to get towards resolving this. Of course, Sko's played a lot of games to where they tried to stop the discovery process for IBM and asking that IBM give more information and Sko give less information. But there was some interesting things being found outside of the court case by experts out there with interest in this. And we have talked about somebody in the past called Chris Helwig that was a Sko Caldera employee that openly admits to contributing to, I don't know, well, let me take away the opening admits, because I'm not sure if that's true. But it's proven that he contributed to XFS, SMP, and JFS, which are where portions of the code that Sko has outlined there being copyright infringement. Well, Tigran Avazin, hopefully I'm saying that right, Avazin private, says his SMP contributions to the Linux kernel while at Sko were approved by his boss. Grokol has reported before the contributions made to Linux kernel by Christoph Helwig while he was a Caldera employee. We have also offered some evidence of contributions by old Sko employees as well. Alex Rosten decided to do some more digging about the contributions of one kernel coder, Tigran Avazian. Tigran contributed code to the kernel, including the SMP, while working at the old Sko, and he informs us that he did it with the approval of his superiors there at the company, and his boss knew the code to be redistributed under the GPL.
There we go. I think that's, you know, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a person that's saying that that's what happened, and he's willing to put his word down because it's in the paper in the report. Obviously, it's going to be moved towards the case. You know? Obvious. I mean, there's a lot of code out there, you know, so a lot of things can happen.
Yeah, that's all you can do, is you can only say something so many ways.
Yeah. But obviously, we know this is a whole charade. Call me a conspiracy theorist, but I think I'm damn right. Obviously, Microsoft has something to benefit, so they're you know, probably kicking a little bit of extra funds over there. Maybe even shove the idea down their throats.
Yeah, they said, well, you could be going down here anytime, so why don't we keep you afloat and you do our bidding?
Yeah.
How's that sound? You all keep your jobs for a little while longer.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. As long as you give me that house, and no problem. So, that is some more news coming out that Sko probably contributed to some of that code, or not all. Well, it seems like IBM wins both motions to compel, which is to compel Sko to give the information that IBM originally requested in the discovery process. Let's see, here it goes. Needless to say, there was blood all over the floor on the Sko side of the aisle and none on the left side. Judge granted both IBM motions to compel, gave Sko 30 days to comply with specificity, and suspended further discovery. Did not rule on the Sko motion until the next hearing scheduled for Friday, January 23rd at 10 a.m. SCO did say that they will be filing a complaint within days on copyright violations. So within 30 days, it seems like they have to...
Put up or shut up.
Put up or shut up. With specificity, whatever that means. There's always some sort of thing that's thrown in.
Well, that means it can't just be general. It's got to actually be specific stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. So it's got to be... It's got to be the goods.
Yeah. Well, this is a paper describing what that is, and there you go, Judge. No, I want the real goods.
Yeah. Because obviously the legal counsel or, people involved, the judge or whatever, obviously sees the crap going on.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't take much to figure that out. And in most cases, if somebody's I'm not a lawyer, but I would assume in most cases, if somebody says you're doing something, you're violating our copyright, they're like, here it is. Here's the copyright. Here's the evidence. Give us our money.
Yeah.
You know, but this isn't about money for SCO. Well, not from the case, from IBM. Well,
from Microsoft.
Maybe if they could have won it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like that may happen. Because there's too many doubts. Too many reasonable doubts. So we've just got to cut clean with a little small settlement. Okay. Yeah, this is just something talking about here. It says, InfoSAR, and just a little bit more about SCO. InfoSAR, one word, it's company name. As this interrogation seeks information as to whether the plaintiff has ever distributed the code in question and otherwise made it available to the public, SCO has never authorized, approved, or knowingly released any part of subject code that contains or may contain its confidential and proprietary information or trade secrets for inclusion in any Linux kernel or as part of any Linux distribution. So that's SCO responding to that, saying, well, this guy's saying his boss allowed him to do it. We're not agreeing with it. But I don't know. Sue that guy. Don't sue IBM. Sue the guy that put it in. See if his boss really let him put it in. Maybe he's your problem.
Yeah, maybe he found his boss's rubber stamp.
Yeah. Rubber stamp on digital property?
On the approval of his code.
Yeah, just joking. Okay, well, this is like a small joke. Sounds like David Letterman's top 10. It's Linus's top 10 SCO barbs.
Right on.
All right, here it goes. 10, not about IP. And this is the quote. None of the SCO accusations have anything to do with IP rights. They're all about contacts between IBM and SCO. All the IP rights blathering by SCO is just that, blathering. And 9. SCO is claiming parenthood of that child and now wants to make money off the earnings of that child. Even though SCO has refused to undergo the technical equivalence of DNA testing, and even through my and other people's DNA, it is probably all over Linux. 8. We have to sadly decline taking business model advice from a company that seems to have squandered all of its money that it made off a Linux IPO, I might add, since there's a nice bit of irony there, and now seems to play the U.S. legal system as a lottery.
Ooh, that was sharp.
Number 7. So, when he attacks the GPL as being somewhat against financial gain, that notion that the GPL has an exchange of receipt and copyrighted works is actually explicitly encoded in the U.S. copyright law. It's not just a crazy idea that some lefty commie hippie dreamed up in a drug-induced stupor. Yeah, man, open source, man. Yeah. So, all right, 6. SCO is playing it like the Reliance, the organization backed by Clonard's founder, known as Real, saying... Well, show you proof in a few weeks through an expert panel that we trust. Let's see if this is any baby or not. Let's see if there is any baby or not. All right. 5. Some Jerry Springer action. Quite frankly, I found it most interesting in a Jerry Springer kind of way. White trash battling it out in public, throwing chairs at each other. SCO crying about IBM, IBM's other women. Fairly entertaining.
Yeah, yeah.
Number 4, do you steal a car in broad daylight with a lot of people around? Or do you steal a car, go for a joyride at 4 a.m. in the morning when there aren't a lot of people around? With open source, there's a lot of daylight, a lot of people looking at the code. You don't really go around and steal things.
Yeah.
If you did, obviously, find out who did it. Okay, number three. If Daryl McBride was in charge, he'd probably make marriage unconstitutional, too, since clearly it de-emphasizes the commercial nature of a normal human being interaction and probably is a major impediment to the commercial growth of prostitution.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Obviously. And number two, they are smoking crack.
All right. Yeah. All right. That's pretty good.
And number one. Dun, 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 dun. We find your references to a negotiating table somewhat confusing, since there doesn't seem to be anything to negotiate about. SCO has yet to show any infringing IP, which is intellectual property, in the open source domain, but we wait with bated breath for when you will actually care to inform us about what you are blathering about.
Yeah.
So that is the top 10 Linus SCO barbs.
All right.
Rancer. Or all that, so. All right. Well, VR is just pulling through.
Oh, yeah.
As best he can.
I'm done. Stick a fork in me.
All right. Well, we have 10 minutes left, and we're probably going to fill that with audio because I wouldn't want to fill it with blathering.
Right on. Quality, not quantity.
Yeah. So,
I think we've had a quality show tonight.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, that's good.
So, okay, we touched major points, right?
Yeah.
SCO sucks. We figured that out.
Yeah.
Showing more of the crap that's going on. And we found out that...
Ooh, that Linux and open source is going to get a piggyback on the big, you know, brawny backs of corporate America.
Yeah. No? No, it's a benefit. It benefit both.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Linux is, you know, hitching a ride.
Okay.
You're going to... And they're going to go a little further.
And they're, yeah, that's what we're talking about, the Walmart PCs, and we're talking about the open source being beneficial and all that stuff. It's cheaper, so it's good. And then we've also talked more about the upcoming problems with technology and also how the corporate world is using technology against us. But
we can do it on a, you know,
defile
their authority through good... Good old fashioned
circumvention, reverse tactics, and
guerrilla warfare.
Guerrilla warfare. So we have now been labeled terrorists, and communists, and well, you know what? How about okay? So we did all that, and
you know, before 9/11, I always thought that ones that were considered terrorists or guerrillas or whatever, the rebels. Whatnot were the only you were those people were labeled because they weren't winning and they weren't the ones that wrote history.
Well, that's true. You got to be I would be just a little careful in saying because some people obviously that were doing those things weren't benefiting anybody, but there were people that, definitely did. I was kind of trying to figure out if somebody actually. Be cool to meet somebody who's actually like a relative of, they know they're an ancestor of like George Washington or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
There's got to be somebody walking around that knows that.
Oh, yeah. There's actually a whole organization.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and there's actually people who know that their ancestors came over on like the Mayflower.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that sounds really
And the
really
Santa Maria and the Pina. Pinta. Pinta.
Pinta.
Pinta.
Pinta.
Pinta.
One of those things. One thing to mention, too. Since we're getting down to the last minutes here, Saddam Hussein was captured today.
Yeah.
Yesterday, actually. They captured yesterday.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting on what will unfold henceforth.
I think they shouldn't kill him.
Oh, I know they shouldn't kill him.
Yeah.
Because it makes him a martyr.
Yeah. Well, even so, there's that. And also, if you don't kill him,
you can use him as
example all the time.
Yeah, you just lay out all that, you find out more information about his tyranny and all this other stuff, and you make him, he can look worse and worse by each day.
Yeah.
But if he gets killed or whatnot, he becomes a martyr and he becomes 10 times more powerful than he ever was.
You know what's funny is I think that is the first time in history, well, in recent, like, you know, recent 1,000 years or so where they've found... Somebody's gone over, and a guy that was oppressing his land is now going to actually own up to it now.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, I think, you know, the historical thing that happened was 9/11. I think the next historical thing that happened was now the capture of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. And we'll really see, you know, how, you know, influential or significant it was, you know, in the coming months.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I even saw the pictures of the little hole that he was in, and that sucks. He had it was a hole that you go down, it's like 60 by 8 feet in there, and basically he sat in there, and there's a small ventilation shaft, and he had $750,000 in cash.
Wow.
He had a pistol, two AKs, and that little hole was covered up. And, I mean, that's amazing to go from where he was in his palaces to this type of thing. And the funny thing that really hit me once somebody was talking about it on talk radio is that he had a pistol and he didn't use it when the American soldiers came. But yet he wants to tell other people to go off and kill themselves for Allah and uh-huh. stuff like that. And
he had the perfect opportunity to make himself a martyr. To really motivate all of those that would have followed him.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, because he's just going, okay, well, you got me. You know, the game's done.
Yeah.
It's going to defile
gonna
the whole.
I'm going to sit here and whine and you know, act, you know, stupid. And
can I get a razor now, please?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's probably turned into a big baby. Well, I think that's our show.
Yeah. And, well, this is... Pierre signing off saying, we are not domestic terrorists.
And this is Slip Mode signing out. Very busy night. But we'll see you again in 2 weeks with the news. See you then.